So we will hear argument next in case number 241201, EscapeX IP against Google. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Ramey.
Good morning, Your Honors. Bill Ramey for Appellant EscapeX IP. If it pleases the Court, may I begin?
Please.
EscapeX seeks reversal of a sanction under Section 285 and a sanction under Section 1927. But before I get into my argument, I wanted to kind of frame the appeal. I think it's appropriate. We are only here today because another court found the claims of the 113 patent ineligible at the 12B6 stage on January 24, 2023. And after deciding not to appeal, EscapeX could only get Google to dismiss this case if it dismissed with prejudice. That allowed Google to file its Section 285 motion. Prior to that, Google did not file a motion to dismiss whether under patent eligibility or otherwise for failure to state a claim. Rather, Google answered the second amended complaint on October 17, 2022. After Google answered, EscapeX was ready to test the merits of its claim. However, the finding in New York changed that. When the few short weeks after deciding not to appeal, after that month that we looked at the matter and decided not to come to this course acting for a reversal, that dismissal, EscapeX sought to dismiss the case.
I think, though, it's pretty selective to say that's the only reason we're here. You had a pattern of not being responsive to Google in this case. They reached out to you about whether the case was in the right court or should be transferred. No response. They pointed out things that they thought were incorrect in your complaint, seemingly showing a lack of any diligence in pre-suit investigation, which they couldn't put in a 12B6 because they had to accept as true what you alleged, even though evidently they knew and thought you should know it's not true. No response. Aren't those the beginnings of why we're here?
Your Honor, I actually don't think so. I think we were responsive. We amended our complaint twice. This is the second amended complaint they answered.
Did you respond to their inquiries about whether you thought you were in the right venue?
I personally had whether they were in the right venue. It was based on convenience is what they were transferring.
Was there any response?
Yes, we'd actually talked to them originally about that briefly. I did have a conversation with Mr. Banner myself.
So when they suggest to us that there was no response whatsoever, that's incorrect?
That's incorrect. There was constant communications back and forth. We didn't write a formal response on the motion to transfer. We looked at the matter at that point, Your Honor, and said the expense in fighting it was too much. We were thinking we probably would lose on the motion to transfer. There were, I think, 24 exhibits with it. And so we decided just not to oppose it. And then we actually filed, I can't remember the exact date, but I think it was 16 or 17 days after they filed the motion to transfer, a notice of non-opposition. So we have an affirmative on
that. When they point out that it seems you've done no pre-suit investigation because you don't understand their products and the timing of when they were released, did you respond to that?
Well, yes, we amended the complaint for a response for that, and we actually have put that forward. That's in, Your Honor, if you would look at the appendix.
I'm familiar with the amended complaint, but was there any informal response to indicate that you were, you know, considering what they were raising with you?
I'm not, just in brief phone conversations with Mr. Banner, that's all we had. We didn't do any substantive response at that time. We merely went and amended our complaints. Well, I guess the issue that we see with the infringement allegations, it's kind of like if you have a shift on the fly for a four-wheel drive. Four-wheel drives have existed for a long time on cars, just like AutoAd may have existed for a long time with Google's product, the YouTube Music product. But when they added that artist-specific application, that was what we didn't find up until after the priority date for the 113 patent. That's what we added in to our infringement allegations and the Second Amendment complaint to make sure that that was very clear. And if the actual appendix, Your Honor, sorry, it was submitted by Google, our diligence on this exact point at Appendix 0235 through 0236, when we showed that the AutoAd features, when it started and when it ended, what we could find with the Wayback Machine. So we put exactly into our amended complaint what we alleged was when the Wayback Machine said the AutoAd feature with the features we were accusing of infringing existed. And we have that Actually, it starts on 0233. And then it goes into the, right on the next page, 0235. And we talk about how we're just, how we're showing when that was added and then when it ended, when it stopped. So it was there for 6 years.
Can you just, I think I would like to understand this better. What are you saying that this shows?
Yes, Your Honor. So if you look at, if you look at 0235, Your Honor, what we did here is because one of the allegation by Google was that, AutoAdd existed before the priority date of the 113 patent. So we, our technical resources went back and they went to the Wayback Machine, and the earliest point where we could find an artist-specific application for the AutoAdd feature was shown on this slide, 0235.
I'm sorry, where does it say this is the earliest we could find?
Okay, I'm sorry, 0234. It says start of AutoAdd feature. My apologies, Your Honor. Can you see that on the red?
Well, this is not in color. This is not in color, so...
Okay, my apologies, Your Honor. See, where it says Google's YouTube video, if you go
to
the
and I see start of AutoAdd feature. I don't know who wrote those words, where they come from, what's behind them.
Okay, these are in our infringement contentions that we submitted to them. So this is what we're alleging proves our case. This is what we're saying is these are allegations of infringement that we submitted to them. If we go back, Your Honor, and we look...
So we're supposed to understand the start of AutoAdd feature, this phrase, means that you think this is where it was, this is the earliest you could find?
Yes, sir. That was in our infringement contentions. These, if you go back to 0214, that you can see this is what this is our infringement contentions. We were actually just then looking at claim 14. We've actually done the same thing for claim 1. So this is how we tried to address it. That's at appendix 0222. And there, if you go to appendix 0221, Your Honors, it says timeline analysis. And so that's where we start our timeline analysis of when the AutoAdd feature was added that we could find. And that's how we put this into our infringement contention to try to give evidence to Google that we had looked at this issue, Your Honor. But overall, if I can go back to the argument, I think if we go to looking to the Parkin Theaters versus Perkins test, it was cited by Octave Fitness. We're looking for some sort of bad faith or some sort of grossly unfairness in here and that. We just don't find in this case. This is a case where it existed for a few short months on the docket. It was only dismissed because a court in New York, Judge Furman, found the patent invalid under 101. And after we looked at it, we dismissed the case with Google, and then they filed the motion for fees.
About that, because the record seems pretty clear. You dismissed, represented to the district court that you had their consent that they wouldn't seek fees, and that was all false.
So that's an interesting point, and I've gone back and talked to our California counsel did file that. So that was a communication from another attorney in my office, Jeff Kubiak, with Mr. Barron, and he came to the agreement that the case was going to be dismissed. He thought he had the agreement of Mr. Barron to dismiss with prejudice, and that was a simple mistake. I can't find anything other than that. He swears to this day that he had an agreement to dismiss with prejudice.
There's no paperwork. Why not explain that to the district court when you filed the supplemental stipulation of dismissal?
Pardon me? I'm sorry, I didn't...
You file a supplemental dismissal stipulation without explaining what the error was in the first one, the error being that you represented something that was not true. Why not explain that to the district court at that time?
In retrospect, I think we would, but it was just so that we were trying to get done quickly because Mr. Barron had contacted us for Google's attorney and had said that they needed the case dismissed because they were going to start incurring fees. They had to prepare for some motion or something about 7 or 8 days later. And so that was the onus for us to get the case dismissed. It wasn't done anything intentional. It was within a day that Ms. Calra had filed the corrected notice of dismissal. It was an accident, a pure accident.
When it came time for the fees motion, the first fees motion,
yes,
the 285 fees motion, what did you say in response to the arguments made by Google for why this was exceptional? I'm going to start to my mind is the very, very small thing of the mistaken stipulation. First, what did you say about that?
That was a mistaken stipulation. It wasn't.
Did you say in your response to the 285, I'm not interested at the moment in anything that happened before the 285 motion. Okay, so now I'm just talking about they file a 285 motion, you file a response. Remind me, please, what you said about, I'm sorry, I do want to ask about the stipulation question, but not because I think it's the big deal. I just want an answer to the question. What did you say about the mistaken stipulation?
Ms. Colera submitted a declaration explaining that it was a mistake.
Okay. Now, on the big issue, pre-suit investigation.
Yes, sir.
What did you say about the pre-suit investigation in the 285 response, not later?
Our 285 response was limited to showing that our infringement claims showed that the auto add feature was not added, was added after the priority date for the 113 patent. The feature we were accused of infringing. So we were tied to an infringement, which necessarily included validity because
Can you show me where in your opposition to the 285 motion you provided some evidence or argument about how the auto add feature changed between the 2014 priority date and later?
Yes, Your Honor, one second. Your Honor, during the break, I'll get you that exact site of where it came from in the record. I don't have it with me right now.
Just so you know how I'm thinking about it right now, this seems to me the crucial issue that you later, in response to the motion, no, I'm sorry, in filing your motion to amend the judgment, put in some new evidence, right? Two declarations, one of your CEO and one of the
The
technical resource. Yeah. That was not in front of the judge at the time the judge was deciding the 285 issue. And I want to understand what was in front of the judge on the 285 motion on the crucial question of pre-suit investigation.
And it was issues about infringement, Your Honor. And I don't have the site to the motion right now, but I'll get that in from the record site. I'm in my rebuttal. If you don't mind, I'd like to just touch one thing real quick, and then I'll sit down, Your Honor, and just touch briefly on the 1927 sanctions. And I would just like to say that for a Section 1927 sanction to be appropriate in California in the Ninth Circuit, it doesn't just have to be reckless. It has to be reckless, and then it has to be has to be frivolous. The filing has to be frivolous. So here, when the judge did find reckless, I'll give you that, but there was no frivolous finding. We know from Caputo versus Tungsten, 96 Fed 4th, 1111, it tells us at page 1155 that for frivolous arguments for the purpose of 1927 sanctions are ones that are baseless and made without reasonable and competent inquiry or made up of legal and factual contentions so weak as to constitute.
The 1927 finding relates to your 59E motion, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
How could it be anything other than frivolous to claim that these declarations are newly discovered evidence?
And Your Honor, I can get that in my rebuttal when I get back, but I cited it in the brief. Okay, yes, Your Honor. So, as we cited in our brief, the Ninth Circuit has used the test of new evidence committed clear or initial or manifestly unjust or an intervening change in control of the law. And then Google's own letter cited the case that said there may be other highly unusual circumstances warranting reconsideration.
But I understood your argument in the 59E, but correct me if I'm wrong, was, hey, Judge, we have newly discovered evidence. Was that not the grounds that you contended allowed you to move under 59E?
It was manifestly unjust and newly discovered evidence.
Where did you say manifestly unjust in your opposition?
I think we cited the case law that said, but I'm not sure that we specifically pointed that out. But this is what we were moving under from their own letter that they sent us.
How could it be newly discovered evidence? It was declarations from your own client and maybe an employee.
Yes, Your Honor. Going back to the standard for how you can do a Section 1927, those were made with competent inquiry. The judge did deny the 59E. That doesn't make it sanctionable to counsel.
The question, though, is this. I mean, obviously you can't say it was newly discovered because you're saying that it preexisted because it was before the suit was filed. So it seems like it's a very difficult question to answer, but you need to answer it.
Yes, Your
Honor. How could it be newly discovered?
It was newly discovered that we hadn't developed that evidence to give to the court. We hadn't developed it, and that's what we meant by that.
You had not yet taken the time to get the declaration statements.
We went from the root of attacking it from, we looked at the infringement point of view, identified from the technical resource that the auto add feature wasn't added until after the priority date for the 113 patent. That's how we made sure that we had a valid infringement claim under View Engineering to have satisfied our Rule 11 basis. That's how we went. I think I'm over my time. Can I come back and say a quick 2-minute rebuttal after this?
Yes.
Thank you very much, John.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, Jonathan Teets for Google. With me is Dan Bagatelle, co-counsel. I want to start by just addressing 3 points in a reply brief that we didn't get to address in briefing. The first of them is a statement by EscapeX that we admitted that there was a pre-priority date product and a post-priority date product, and that the features differed. I don't think there's any reasonable way to read our red brief to say that, but
What's the second point?
That clearly. What's that?
What's the second point?
The second point is there's a new statement that the YouTube Music was discontinued and rebranded as YouTube Video. That's not true. In fact, the original URL in the first set in the mix and match theory of contentions, that URL still works. They're separate products and they do separate things.
What's the third point?
The third point is the argument that they didn't waive the manifest injustice argument. I don't think I need to belabor that. But even in the reply brief, they only cite what they said in the 1927 briefing. Those are the 3 points I wanted to address.
So can you get to I think what I sort of, at least I'm interested in something Mr. Ramey said about the preliminary or the infringement contentions. What was it, a 235, 216? What were the pages that
234 to 236, I think is the range.
Right. So this was, was this attached to the second amended complaint?
No, these were infringement contentions. Okay, the chart is the same as the chart that was attached to the second amended complaint. That's true. Start of auto add feature, that part is different. That new comment's different. I think an important context bit to note here is that these are infringement contentions that were served in October. So it was actually before Google's letter saying, look, auto add predates.
Here's what I'm trying to get at. It seems to me the core of this, the core of what actually seems strong is the pre-suit investigation point. And I'm trying to understand whether there were, before the motion to amend proceeding, whether there were arguments or evidence asserted that we had reason to think that the accused auto add feature postdated the priority date and therefore would not invalidate the patent. If yes,
absolutely not. I don't.
So
see
what,
that
what about this?
This is the start of the auto add feature itself.
I'm sorry.
That's the start. That's their assertion that that's the start of the auto add feature itself. But Google had shown that. In fact, the feature was far before this date. It was at least a year before.
So just trying to understand this language. Start of auto add feature. This is not start of a feature in auto add or start of auto add, parenthesis, which is the feature as a unitary thing, which is obviously a very different position.
That would be the second one, Your Honor. The feature itself, auto add as itself. This URL, there's a screenshot from it on the next page, and this is YouTube's guide to how to use AutoAd as a whole when managing a playlist.
So this could not be understood as asserting that there was a artist-specific feature within AutoAdd that this date in 2015 was the start of.
There's no reasonable way to understand this argument to mean that.
Well, why is that?
Why is that? In addition to the point that Scapix didn't argue that at Appendix 433 or 429, which are the relevant parts of the 285 briefing, what they say in Appendix 234, 235, and 236 itself just relates to playlists as a whole. It doesn't say anything about artist-specific application. It's just about this feature as a whole. In fact, if you turn back, Your Honor, to the claim chart that precedes this, that's at Appendix 230 for Claim 27, for instance, the claim mapping is pretty much the same across the patents. This AutoAdd feature that they're pointing to corresponds to the same screenshot is present in a limitation on Appendix 231, for instance. It talks about one or more commands to specify a change, et cetera, a whole broader set of things than this narrow artist-specific application feature that they're focusing on now on appeal. If they had made the argument below, it would have been easy to rebut, and I think it also would have been in the judge's discretion to address it. I want to respond to just five quick points that the counsel made. The first is about this conversation about the transfer motion. I think the first important point is that there's nothing in this record and nothing was said about that in response at 285. But the other point is, I think I heard counsel said, and forgive me if I'm wrong, that EscapeX noted its non-opposition to transfer. It was Google that noted EscapeX's non-opposition once the deadline had come and passed. The other point I want to respond to...
Were the fees that were awarded... Did the fees that were awarded include fees for work done on the transfer motion?
I believe they did, as part of the whole exceptional case. That's a question of the fee amount, of course, and that's not at issue on appeal, the fee amount anymore. The other point I want to respond to was that...
I'm sorry, I don't remember this part. The district court gave you... substantially less than you asked for, right?
Yes.
Did the district judge say, here, he must have said, right, here are the parts that I'm not going to give you?
I should go for it. Google got a haircut on the 1927 award. On a 285 award, the district judge found the amount facially very reasonable and even thought that we were effectively showing mercy, so the amount was reasonable.
285 is everything, and presumably, I mean, you don't happen to remember whether you asked for fees on the work in preparing the transfer motion.
I don't happen to remember. I don't think it's certainly not in the appendix.
And would any of that, I'm sorry, this stuff matters to me.
Yes.
So would any of that work have been unnecessary if they had agreed to the transfer?
Yes.
Earlier?
Certainly some of that work.
I assume most of the work for the transfer motion went into preparing the motion itself.
Preparing the motion and supporting evidence to
okay.
it. Yes, because there could have been a stipulation. There could have been a voluntary dismissal and refiling.
So delay in responding to the motion, essentially all of the work on the transfer motion has been done by then.
Yes.
So is there a finding that the transfer was, that filing in the original form was itself unreasonable?
I don't think, no, there was not a finding on that.
Okay.
And actually, I should clarify that not all the work had been done by the point of non-opposition, because the transfer point had been raised, for instance, in Google's November 7th letter, and it was previewed, and EscapeX, I've heard say, had a conversation about this. So there were points at which, given the clearly more convenient Northern District of California venue in this case, that additional work could have been averted. But was not, and there was not a position taken, as is clear in this record.
So would the timeline show that Google contacted EscapeX about transferring venue before you had completed work on your motion to transfer?
That is more in the weeds than I know, Your Honor.
I'm not sure what the record shows on that.
Well, the record, I believe, shows that that transfer happened. Now, I'm just saying EscapeX has alluded to additional things that are not in this record, and so that's my
right.
hesitation
and one
on
was
that
the
point.
Brief phone responses. I think you've just told us there's no record
yes,
of that.
There's no record of that.
How about this? I think it was suggested today that that they did get consent to file the stipulation of dismissal. Is there anything in the record on that?
There's nothing in the record of that, Your Honor, at all. And then that would have been a prime thing to have said, but I think that still wouldn't have gone far enough because it doesn't address why Kate Lazarus' signature would have been addressed. But I think the important point is it's not in the record.
And why, if at all, is it important that the stipulation of dismissal was filed without consent from Google?
Well, for one thing, it misrepresents to the public what Google is willing to agree in and what circumstances. It caused more work because Google had to reach out and ask for this to be withdrawn and to ask that it be withdrawn with an explanation to say this isn't something that Google said and then changed its own mind on, which the simple withdrawal leaves open. So it increased the work, and then it also, of course, implicates the duty of candor to the court before the Northern District of California. The other point I want to just address is this first shred of defense of the newly discovered evidence standard, and that the evidence wasn't developed. There's a case that's pretty close to this, actually, in the cases cited among the parties, and that's Coastal Transfer. That's a case from 1987 in which a similar claim was made about, oh, the evidence that the expert relied on wasn't developed until after. That was a frivolous argument then, and it was frivolous to insist that it was newly discovered evidence on appeal.
And is that authority that you pointed out to EscapeX when they filed the 59E motion? There was some informal communication in the record on that motion, I think.
It's cited in the authorities. It says the same thing as School District Number 1J, which was the case that we cited in the letter to EscapeX and that the district court relied on. And it follows the logic of Exxon, which footnote 5, which was also cited in the letter to EscapeX and which the district court relied on.
And you gave us supplemental authority about another district court sanction decision related to the same firm, I believe. What, if any, is the significance of that supplemental development?
The primary point of the supplemental authority letter, Your Honor, is to belie the notion that this case is unusual in the district court's approach. Other district courts are following the same approach in other circuits under similar circumstances, and that's the main thing. That case doesn't involve the same patents as this case. It does happen to involve the same parties.
Thank you. Can I just understand a little bit better the insufficiency of pre-suit investigation essentially is the basis for saying the suit was quite irresponsibly filed. Does that depend, and I don't remember, just tell me whether the district court said the basis for my finding this irresponsible filing is that if you had done a pre-suit investigation, you would have discovered that the thing you accused had priority? Or was it independently that the thing you accuse just cannot conceivably be viewed as artist-specific?
What the district court said is that a basic online search would have revealed that this feature did predate. So it was a simple set of steps. This actually parallels Thermalife, I think, except it's a little bit easier of a pre-suit investigation that would have had to have been done than in the Thermalife case that the parties rely on. That case said, you know, you could have easily tested these products and you would have known upon testing that these claim limitations would have been met. This, the district court concludes, a basic online search would have revealed that this feature, the one that you accuse, predated the patent.
So, I mean, which, so I thought I was remembering correctly that the basis for this was an irresponsibly filed lawsuit was that if you had done an investigation, you would have discovered that the thing you accused had priority, which places, to my mind, right at the center of this question of interpreting this start of auto add feature in the allegations. Did the district court explore that? Did the other side, in responding to 285, point to this and say, what we meant here was, you know, that we looked and found that the earliest appearance of a particular feature inside AutoAdd was post-priority date?
No, Your Honor. They did not say that. And I think probably the reason why is when they later did explain what they had done, the story there from their witnesses was that, well, we knew that the feature predated. So there would have been...
I think you probably understand by now that it is incredibly important to my thinking on this, what one means by feature. So
yes.
If when you just used the word, did you mean feature equals auto add?
Yes.
That's obviously not what I'm interested in.
Okay.
They say there was a feature that appeared in AutoAdd after the priority.
The artist-specific application. That simply didn't come up.
Okay.
They don't say in later in the Rule 59e briefing, but that certainly did not come up at 285.
Okay.
If there's no further questions, I would ask that the court affirm.
Briefly, Judge Stark, you had asked me for support, and I apologize if it was right in front of me. I didn't get it out before. For when we brought this up, if you go to Appendix 0427 through 0429, we do, in fact, in the response to the motion for fees, bring up that it is this artist-specific application we're looking for, and that's specifically Appendix 0428. So quite in contrast to what you just heard from my colleague on the other side, this was our point of differentiation right in the middle of the paragraph. California, so we have line numbers. That's lines 17 through 20 of that page.
Did you say 0248? I'm sorry.
I meant 0428, Your Honor.
Oh, 0428.
I'm sorry. If I said 0248, I apologize. But I meant 0428.
And which lines on page 428
Starts with paragraph 15 through 20, but it's right there towards the end. It says Google argues with support that YouTube is not an artist-specific application. And that's what that was our point of differentiation. So they recognized, even at that time, that that was our point of differentiation. So for them to say that we didn't talk about that at all, that's the whole point. But that was our diligence. That's what we say did not exist until after the priority date for the 113 patent. And I will say that the briefing did point to new evidence, but we cited to the case that Google cited us in the letter. We were trying to say that the circumstances of how this appeal came about, that the district court judge, that all the findings are made in the motion for fees stage rather than in the merit stage, that the dismissal was filed, and that the Ninth Circuit, under the Keegan case, doesn't allow 1927 sanctions on initial pleadings, that we were trying to say these were all the circumstances that were odd that would allow us to file a motion for to modify the judgment. It's specifically, they're listed in the brief, and I don't have to go through them. I apologize for that, but thank you very much for your time, John.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. Case is submitted.